Hey there, and welcome to this week's episode of Databook. This is a healthcare analytics news podcast, and I am Jack Murtha.
I'm Tom Castles, your co-host. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review Databook.
And check us out online at hcanews.com.
Me and Jack really love producing this podcast, and we love that you're listening, but we'd love for more people to listen too.
So please get out there and tell a friend. Maybe even play an episode of Databook during your next road trip.
We hope you have a cool one coming up, but if you don't, you could play it during your next party too.
That might be a little weird. But whatever you do, please just support Databook and us by spreading the word.
But first, relax that big brain of yours and buckle up because we're about to take you for a ride.
Today's story is, well, it was sort of a tough to find story at first.
It all started with a thought way back when, and the thought went something like this.
Who is responsible, like legally responsible, when artificial intelligence fails?
When artificial intelligence kills.
Not in the evil robots take over the world kind of way, but in the very real accident kind of way.
Think about it like this. AI is making big strides forward. It's getting more powerful and it's entering more aspects of our lives.
Like medicine, duh. You see it all over, at least pieces of it. AI helps to perform robotic surgery, it helps with diagnostics, and it even makes predictions and helps determine treatments.
In the future, AI is only going to play a bigger role in healthcare. But who knows what sort of responsibility it might hold one day.
So despite all the good that can come from AI for medicine, these advances raise a crucial question.
The crucial question that led us to this story in the first place. You know, who's responsible when AI kills?
Well, unfortunately enough, we saw an early case of that earlier this year. In March, a self-driving car struck and killed a pedestrian in Arizona.
It was the first pedestrian death by a self-driving car. But they've also gotten into crashes and killed drivers in the past.
So we dug a bit deeper.
And then a little bit even deeper still.
And what did we find?
Today on Databook, we've got the story of the first human being who was ever killed by a robot.
It's 1972. And Flat Rock, Michigan is just starting to come on the map. Flat Rock is no longer a little village. It officially became a city less than 10 years ago. But despite that, there's still only about 6,000 people who live here.
The thing is, Flat Rock is less than 30 miles from Detroit. And in 1972, Detroit is the automobile manufacturing center of the world.
And a little bit of that magic flows down south to Flat Rock.
Because in January 1972, Ford opens its Michigan casting center right in the middle of town. That's where it plans to build its cars.
Or parts of cars. An old photo shows this sweeping building surrounded by sweeping parking lots near sweeping forests and fields. This building, this car plant, is quite the futuristic site for the 1970s.
And that's exactly what Ford wants. When their doors open, Henry Ford II touts the metal casting plant as the company's largest investment ever in 69 years of doing business.
It costs $150 million. And Ford says it takes 3 years of work to plan and build this thing. And he touts it as the most high-tech casting plant around. It's clean, it's efficient, and it's an economic engine.
By 1973, Ford expects to employ 3,500 workers at this plant.
But the casting plant isn't run by people alone. There are also computers.
Lots of computers, the kinds that control 50-ton melting furnaces and electricity usage for the entire 2.5 million square foot plant.
And the kinds of automated machines that pluck gigantic pieces of scrap metal off factory shelves.
The kinds of machines that help build engine blocks and cylinder heads, truck engines, and casting for transmissions.
Oh, and there's one other thing that Ford includes in this modern marvel. A hospital fully equipped for surgery.
By 1979, 7 years later, the Michigan Casting Center is running at full speed.
One report even suggests that Ford surpasses its initial hiring goal. It provides 4,000 jobs, which is 500 more than expected.
But that's all about to change.
It's about to get really bad for Ford and for the village, excuse me, the city of Flat Rock, Michigan.
But first, it gets really bad for one man in particular.
Robert Williams is 25 years old. He's from Dearborn Heights, about a half-hour drive from Flat Rock.
He's got a wife named Sandra and three kids, and they're really young. The oldest is something like 3 years old.
So Robert makes his living down at the Ford plant, at the Michigan Casting Center.
He's one of just three guys who runs what's called an electronic parts retrieval system. And that's exactly what it sounds like.
And it's made by this company called Unit Handling Systems, another very creative name. And that company is a division of Litton Industries. But I digress. The system is essentially a robot that automatically plucks parts from one part of the plant and brings them to another.
And this is how Robert makes his money. He essentially oversees this big, powerful robotic arm.
He works with the machines.
But on January 25th, 1979, the robot just isn't doing its job. At least not well enough for Robert. It's moving slowly, and it seems like it's giving workers bad intel on the number of parts that are on the shelves.
So it's Robert's job to check out what's going on with this thing, and maybe manually bring down some parts too.
Well, the robot arm's not doing it, and the factory needs these pieces of metal. So Robert scales a storage rack to pick up the slack for this five-story robot arm.
But at the same time, the machine is still doing its job. Very silently, or so the story goes.
The arm is slicing through the air, searching for its parts.
And all of a sudden, a protruding piece of this machine smashes Robert in the head.
He dies instantly. And with that, Robert becomes the first ever human being to be killed by a robot.
The story of Robert Williams is tragic. It's also a story of America's great industrial past colliding violently with its high-tech future in the worst way possible. And it's a story with few answers at the end.
There's little out there about who Robert really was as a person, what he did for fun in his free time. And there's almost nothing published about how this disaster affected his family, his wife, and his three young children.
We do know this. Several years later, a jury awards Robert's family $10 million. Litton, the company that made his robotic killer, was on the hook for that money, not Ford.
Later, the payout is raised to $15 million. But a few years after that, Robert's family settles with Litton. No one knows exactly how much money they got, ultimately. But part of the deal was that Litton admitted no negligence whatsoever, no wrongdoing.
So this wasn't quite the AI that we have today. And the court proceedings that followed didn't result in any real case law to guide AI and liability in 2018.
The story didn't really result in anything but some broken hearts and that big payout.
And Robert's injury is also said to have contributed to the closing of the Michigan Casting Center. But that was kind of just a footnote compared to the lack of demand for the big, heavy metal engines that Ford was producing there.
The Ford plant closed just 2 years after Robert's death. It has since opened again, going from the hands of Mazda and then back to Ford again.
And other people have since died at the hands of machines. Robert was the first, but not the last. Now, this hasn't happened at that specific plant, but it has happened all over the world.
We're talking about in Japan and Germany, again in Michigan, and really any number of factories.
And now, with the killing of a pedestrian by an Uber self-driving car, people are dying at the hands of a different kind of machine. People are dying at the hands of contemporary 2018 high-tech AI.
And sooner than later, we're going to need to figure out exactly who's at fault when AI causes tragedy.
To get a handle on this, we have brought on Gotham Thomas. He's a freelance writer who has been on this show, Databook, in the past, and he writes a lot for Healthcare Analytics News, mostly doing print features. For this issue that is coming out in this month, June, Gotham looked exactly at what we're talking about here, liability for AI through the lens of self-driving cars.
So, Gotham, thanks so much for joining us here today on Databook.
Hi, guys.
I wanted to start off with a question here, Gotham. Who is liable when AI fails on the road or in the operating room?
I mean, that is kind of what the big question that will become more interesting as, you know, AI takes more and more responsibility in our lives and in the businesses that we use. You know, one of the things that I wanted to look at with this story is how, you know, that has worked for the self-driving car world. And the answer is nobody necessarily wants that responsibility. And that's, you know, I see that as a possible area of conflict between the companies that implement AI and the people who use them and, you know, and in some cases may be treated by them in the future.
What are the factors that even go into this really complex decision? What are the people who think about this stuff thinking about?
We do have an existing framework, and that is the laws that govern liability. And, you know, one of the experts I talked to, professor named A. Michael Frumkin, who's a professor of law at the University of Miami, who's written about applications of law to AI factors, he called a human interacting with an AI system the moral crumple zone. Because he said that if there's no human involved in the operation of the system, it's not controversial that whoever designed the tool, the AI, is liable for any problems that occur. But if a human is involved, if the AI is advising a human or the human is operating the system somehow, then apportioning liability, deciding who is liable between a human and an AI is unsettled and controversial, he says.
Self-driving cars seem to exist in some space outside of healthcare. What makes this self-driving car issue so important to medicine when it comes to this particular issue, this Uber case?
The idea of self-driving cars and how they're developing is an interesting forerunner of issues that healthcare applications of AI may see in the future. For example, there's a lot of data collected from self-driving car testing. You know, they were on the road in Arizona. The state of Arizona made agreements with various self-driving car companies to allow them to test their vehicles on the streets. And similarly, in the healthcare system, you know, the thing that trains AI systems is mass amounts of data. The more data they have, you know, the more refined their operations can get. So, you know, there have been a few fatalities with self-driving car systems. One argument is that despite the fact that you see fatalities now, the systems will improve and you won't see those in the future. Is that a moral compromise that we are willing to make? It's hard to find an area of healthcare applications for AI where someone's life is directly in the balance, but that may happen in the future as AI systems become more complicated and more directly affect patients themselves. Right now, a lot of AI systems that I've seen are, you know, machine learning systems to read images and help doctors make diagnoses. And they've demonstrated a pretty reasonable efficiency doing that. But, you know, there's other possibilities for, you know, diagnosis and treatment of a patient that maybe an AI would do on their own. And since these systems are designed by humans, they're not perfect. You know, essentially, we're talking about software, and software has errors and bugs. And, you know, inevitably, there are going to be some issues with that.
What are your biggest concerns surrounding AI and liability? And why do you think they matter so much?
This is a technology and a tool that, you know, many people are excited about that offers incredible potential. But when you're gradually taking decision making away from human beings and putting the health and lives of humans at the disposal of artificial systems, that's scary. And you want to make sure that those systems are designed properly and are the best that they can be. And so I think it's a question of risk. You know, one thing that Frumkin, the a law professor at the University of Miami, pointed out is, would someone be able to say if they suffer an adverse effect from an AI system that it was taught improperly, that it was taught badly? You know, AI systems have shown bias according to what data sets they were given. They can make biased decisions if the data that they learned from, essentially the way they were taught, is biased? So these are questions to consider when we integrate artificial intelligence with the way that we run healthcare today. And the question of responsibility of a doctor to the patient is a contentious one, and one that when administering healthcare, everyone involved in that, you know, administration and the giving of care has to be aware of and understand. And the same goes for artificial intelligence. Once AI begins to take over aspects of treatment and care, similar issues are going to present themselves just because we have the concept of artificial intelligence as somehow better than humans. That's not necessarily true. They're fallible tools created by humans, and there are pitfalls and risks and shortcomings involved in those systems.
So, Gautam, before we let you go, can you tell us what needs to happen and what needs to happen right now to smooth out some of these issues?
Well, this is another interesting question that we can look at what how car companies have treated their self-driving car technologies. There are many companies working on these technologies. Google, what's now called Alphabet, is one. Tesla is another. Uber is a third. Tesla has fought really hard to indemnified their autopilot technology from responsibility for the handful of crashes that have occurred, some of which have resulted in fatalities. But other companies have said, you know what, we are liable for, you know, certain things that happen with our technology. We accept the responsibility, and that's how we're going to go forward. And I think that's a really great thing to do because it shows a lot of confidence in your technology and honesty. And I think that shows a good way forward. If you are ready to apply your technology where human lives and health are on the line, taking a certain amount of legal responsibility beforehand makes people happier and more secure to be subjected to them.
Gautam Thomas, everybody. Gautam, thanks so much for joining us again on this episode of Databook.
My pleasure.
So that's going to do it for this week's episode of Databook. I know we brought you another grim one filled with death and difficult ethical questions. That's kind of the Databook calling card, I guess.
But hey, it's all about finding new ways to search for a brighter future, and we have to make mistakes to get to where we need to be.
No doubt. You and I sure have made plenty of them. So did our wives, I guess.
Unfortunately, we haven't learned.
Well, anyway, if you're really interested in this issue, just check out the June issue of Healthcare Analytics News. Like we said, we had a big story on it in there, and we don't retell the Robert Williams story. We look at it from another way. So you can kind of get your fix if this does intrigue you.
For sure. And you can get that content in any which sort of way you want. You know, come visit us on our website. Call us up on the phone. We could talk to you all about it. Hit us up on Twitter. We send out an email newsletter. And of course, you can get it in our print publication if that's more your speed.
So hcanews.com and on Twitter and other social media, we are HCA_news, Healthcare Analytics News. You'll find us. If you want to find us, you're going to find us.
Oh, yeah. We're out there.
We're out there. And I'm at Jack Murtha on Twitter.
Yep. At Thomas Castles for me. Oh, sorry. At Thomas_Castles for me.
Yeah. Don't forget the middle name that your parents gave you.
T-U-C.
So anyway, I guess I'll give one last pitch for healthcare apps. We want to know what you're using. We'd love to hear if you've got a good healthcare app that's changing the game. So let me know. If you give me something good, I'll write about it.
He's desperate, guys.
Well, the deadline's this week, so it's going to be over. But anyway, thank you again. I am Jack Murtha.
I'm Tom Castles.
And have a great weekend.
See you next time.